When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Underrated. We are the Undercast Company. I am Alan Torres, and joining me as usual are my lovely co-hosts, Ariel Ortiz and Derek McDuff.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, everybody. Thanks a lot for hanging out. And thank you guys for joining in. Today, we're going to be talking about kind of a heavy, psychedelic, weird fucking drama. This was on my underrated kind of list for a long time, but I was always very mixed about it. Because even when I first saw it, I was very mixed about it. But I really wanted to challenge myself and give it another watch. This one is 2009's Enter the Void by Jasper Noé. I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
Directed by him, written by him as well, and Lucille, I'm going to butcher this, Hadzihalilovic, I hope. Starring Paz de la Huerta and Nathaniel Brown. So what this film is about, real quick, it's pretty much a first-person psychedelic view of dying. Essentially, main character Nathaniel Brown's character, Oscar, he is killed by the police in the beginning of the film, and the whole film is him just kind of having an out-of-body experience. His spirit, ghost, whatever you want to soul, whatever you want to call it, is floating around in Japan. I'm assuming Tokyo, Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a... What's the term? Your life flashing before your eyes before you die kind of thing. And there's a lot of different meanings about the film. I kind of thought it was about, you know, death and reincarnation, because there's a big, in the first couple minutes, there's a lot about reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where it's about, you know, when you die, you see these certain things, you see your memories of people you loved and everything, and then you're reincarnated. But when I was reading about it, Jasper Noé had a whole different kind of thing about it, but I'll bring that up later. So yeah, that's kind of the quick little synopsis of the film. We're gonna delve deeper into the really fucking wild, just psychedelic trip of a film it is. So I want to hear what you guys have to say about it.
I think moral of the story is that don't be a literal mother ever.
Motherfucker,
unless you want your mother to be your sister. That's the thing that I got from it. Yeah.
Okay.
This is like a Russian nesting doll of Oedipus complexes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Oedipus complexes. I don't think... He definitely had an Oedipus complex. And then they both had kind of like flowers in the basement kind of vibes.
Flowers
in the attic. There you go. Opposite way. Of essentially, yeah, they... I think that... Well, he did end up being... It's kind of assumed. That's the thing, too. Like, I want to dive into of, like, essentially how it is not exactly what the French friend's character explained. Because, like, I that's what I was like. And that's why I was like, oh, this movie's, like, it's weird. It gets too much. Like, it's in
incredibly overstimulating, like
not really. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Not even. Doesn't even warn you. Like at luck. Yeah. Like doesn't even warn you at the beginning that it's going to be. So I feel really bad. I'm really hoping that they put warning somewhere, you know, on the poster for like, you know, epileptic people.
I mean,
because it just opens. It opens with bright flashing lights, and I couldn't do it. I turned away. Yeah. You
I
know,
mean, Jasper Noé is like irreversible. It is iconic because of a fucking rape scene. So I think Jasper Noé really doesn't give a shit. I think he was like, fuck it, you're in for this.
Yeah, shout out to, I did watch this on Canopy. They did have a little disclaimer when you selected movie that says, like, beware of, like, flashing lights and stuff like that, and also weird-ass sex scenes.
Yeah, the whole last second minute, like, not even minute, it was, like, 15 minutes, yeah. It's, like, it's just, like, too much. It's like, is this gonna get to a point? And it doesn't get into a point because they don't, like, you know, when he enters his sister's womb, it's not even that first building. Like, I thought it was like, oh, is this the same one? It's like, no, it's a different place. I'm like, then why did you have to show that whole first place kind of thing? I guess it's like him searching. Now thinking about it,
it's because that's where
that's where the glows had, like, he started to see the glows and stuff. It wasn't the first time he saw sex, or the first time he saw his sister having it. It's so weird how that we're having this conversation. But yeah, I guess that's like, that was the meaning of it, maybe. That's like, okay, you're ready to jump in and come in.
Yep. Oh man.
Nut in, come in.
That close up. Just
yeah.
The bed. Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate it for its spirituality and its concept. The visuals are, I mean, the psychedelic visuals are pretty cool, pretty interesting. Like at the beginning, it starts off in the form of when he first like takes that drug at the beginning. It kind of starts off in the form DMT. Of like EMT, right?
DMT.
He's always asking for it. but yeah, when he first takes that, it's like psychedelic shapes and stuff like that first, like, are naturally, like, which you kind of see, and I appreciated, like, in the form of, like, synapses and neurons, which was, like, a pretty cool thing to see, because that's, like, essentially what the drug is, you know, firing and doing. So I really liked and dug the visualness of those. Of the actual, like, psychedelic concept.
Yeah, you could be a little vague and be like, yeah. I like the psychedelic vision.
Yeah.
When they had, like, the organic patterns and stuff, kind of,
exactly. That was cool. And, like, yeah, I really like the kind of, I mean, you get a sense of, like, why both him and his sister, who, for a second, I thought that his sister wasn't messed up, but then she like, starts, like, trying to mack him, like, right when she sees him again in the airport, like, after the airport. So I'm like, oh, okay, she's already messed up anyway, because I thought it was going to be, like, oh, he messed her up, he started her on drugs, and, like, no, she was already a freak, which is, like, you understand at least why they're, you know, because of all the trauma that they had with their parents' death, especially, that they're all messed up in that way. I had, in the case of Oscar as a character, I was, like, equating it to, like, essentially, and then also at the beginning, like, when it's, like, a drug bust and all that, I was essentially, like, connecting it to, like, the Safdie brothers, Good Time, and then also Uncut Gems, where it's, like, these characters that essentially write their own undoing, in a way, and aren't the greatest people, most of the time to surround themselves with not the greatest people, manipulate. So I didn't really feel bad for Oscar. The one character that I mainly felt bad for in this movie was his French friend. Like, yeah, he's an addict and stuff like that, but I think he really did care for him. He really did care. I think he really did care for his sister. He kind of was gentle with her, and at like saying, like, oh, you should keep an eye on her, like, in kind of like a flirty way to Oscar. But then also, I think he was like, no, you should, like, you know, she is beautiful, you should keep an eye on her, kind of thing too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I kind of felt bad about him and how he, like, kind of got delved into this, because he wasn't the drug dealer and stuff like that. It was the other guy, the weird man pervert guy kind of thing.
Which one?
The dealer, the one that liked to apparently smear his crap on the guys that he would mess around with, their heads, the back of their head. The dealer.
Yeah. The fucking bald guy who looks like Flea.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so then, like, that too, I found it very interesting because he chose to, I assume, set this before 2001, because in the supposed, like, vision of your future that you see, based on, like, what the French friend said, you know, at the beginning of, like, of what you see, it cuts to, like, a New York borough, and in the background is the two towers. So, mm-hmm. So it's like, I was like, oh, that's date in the movie, dating this time. Okay.
I thought it was more like maybe that was like a flashback to when he was younger, or like when he was.
Because that was his sister and his French friend. Because the guy had long hair. The dad had long hair. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll bring. Oh, yeah, we'll go into that in a little bit. Yeah. Because it's a little weird, but yeah. So Derek, I kind of saw a spoiler of on Letterboxd of how you felt. So I kind of want to curious to hear.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is definitely a film that I'm very, very glad that I got to watch, because the filmic language in this is really strong and interesting. It's doing a lot of things with this kind of, like, the way this camera, it's all from a POV, like, at the first 30 minutes when you're, like, literally just looking out this guy's eyes and you're seeing, like, the blinks and everything. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes an out-of-body experience. And it's, like, for parts of it, it's, like, a third person, and then parts of it, this camera's floating around like a David Fincher movie. And it's doing all this really interesting stuff from, like, an editing and, like, shooting standpoint, where the camera will just kind of be zooming around, and he's just almost this omniscient figure where he can look at anything that's happening in the city or go back and forth in time. And I found all of that very, very cool and interesting. It did a lot of stuff where it's like commenting on the way our film language mirrors the way we tend to use our memory, and the way our memories are just kind of fragmented scenes like this, and the way that this film is doing the same thing, and the same way that film can mirror even like a drug trip, and then it becomes all that gets tied together in this out-of-body experience that is maybe death, but maybe it's just like Alan, as you're kind of alluding to, actually a drug trip of somebody who had just heard about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and it's not really happening, and all that is just really there in the way that the film is shot. And getting to look at it was really cool. I do like that style of filmmaking a lot. I think for me, though, it's just when it gets to be so experimental that you are just kind of getting taken out of the film at certain points. You're a little bored at points because it's just like that, like that last scene where it's just like looking at, like, here's another couple having sex. Here's another couple having sex. Here's another. It was a little much for me. You can tell that this movie is clearly inspired by 2001: A Space Odyssey, specifically that last Star Child sequence. There's a lot of stuff that is like, wow, Gaspar Noé saw that shit and ran with it. And while that's a 5-star movie for me, I love that movie. What I like about that movie is that is all contained to the end. And up till that point, the first like 3/4 of the movie are very formalistic. There's weird stuff happening, but it's shot like a normal movie. The plot progresses normally, and then it gets weird and trippy and stuff at the end. So I think I probably, like, I did really like that first 30 minutes, and I liked a lot of it. It was just probably too much for me. I also did watch the original cut, the one that played at Cannes, rather than the cut down version, which went from like 160 minutes to, I think, about 120 minutes. So from about 2.5 hours, like, down to a clean 2.
I think I saw the original. I think it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes, almost 3 hours. And then I actually watched the cut down version, and it's 2 hours and 23 minutes.
Okay.
So yeah, it's about like 20 minutes cut. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And maybe I would have liked it a little bit more if I'd seen the cut version, but it's definitely one of those movies that I can appreciate. I'm glad I finally got to see a Gaspar Noé movie, because I know he is really big among people who like experimental film and that kind of thing. And so it's something that I definitely needed to experience. If you are a big fan of film, like, this is really an experience movie where I think you should just, like, watch it Interestingly enough, I almost watched this movie when I was high, but I don't really get high that often. I'm not really a big drug guy, but my roommate happened to have like half a cookie, and when I was planning to watch this, and she's like, "You want half?" And I was like, "Sure." We're hanging out, and I was like, "You know what? Maybe I should watch this because I was gonna watch it tonight." And then we were like, "No, let's watch something lighter." So I'm really glad, because I did not know all the intense stuff. This would have been not necessarily a fun watch with my roommate. So I'm glad I kind of just like watched this alone and experienced all the weirdness. Had a much more fun time watching a different drug movie last night, Pineapple Express. Very, very different drug movie. But yeah, I'm glad that I got to kind of watch this movie and just have this very unique experience. I also wanted to say that some of the actors in this, despite a lot of the people in this movie not being professional actors, a lot of them are pretty good, particularly the guy who plays the French friend, Alex. Roy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's never been in anything before. And then the main actress, she is actually an actress, Paz de la Huerta. She was really good. Can't necessarily say the same thing about Nathaniel Brown. He's a director more than an actor, but he just had the back of his head, so wasn't too much of a problem. But
yeah
overall, you know,
so
glad I
so
checked it off the list.
Speaking of just hearing essentially his voice mainly, I don't know, Alan, if you got the sense of like, I was like, there were moments where I was like, that sounds like Greg Sestero. Like, he sounds like Greg Sestero at parts. And I was just And I was just like, it makes sense. It makes sense.
That delivery.
Yeah, because especially like seeing like Best Friends and Mystery Valley, something like that. That's his movie. But I was like, yeah, that's like he's kind of like a Greg Sestero kind of character of it, especially his character in the room, in how stupid he is. how like messed up he screws people over. But yeah, like I think like maybe there were times where I was like, okay, this is like get on with it a little bit. But I think I like when movies are like start off weird and continue on weird instead of like abruptly changing and becoming weird. I think that for me kind of takes me out of a movie. So I was like, at least like at the beginning, especially with the flashing lights, I'm like, okay, this is gonna be it. This is going to be weird.
Those credits were, by the way, so fucking fire. I was watching
one
and I was
the
thinking,
best
I can't.
Opening credits all
I,
all
I was honestly
time.
Thinking, like, this is the best credits I've seen since fucking Scott Pilgrim, which I think came out around the same time.
Yeah,
like, this
yeah,
came out
yeah,
in
yeah.
theaters in 2010. It was in Cannes in 2009. But so, yeah, about the same time.
Yeah. I have a fear of epilepsy, so I'm okay. I'm like, I don't want to chance that. I don't want to chance that. But I really did, like, right when it's opened and, like, me being... I watch gameplay more so than play. So for me, when it opened and it was that first person kind of thing, I was like, oh, this would be an awesome, like, just, like, I'm sure there are. I mean, I think it is called, like, first person RPG. And, like, especially with the voiceover and stuff like that, I was like, this is just, like, first person RPG. Like, especially, like, his dialogue of, like, going, like, pick up this. It's like, okay, go and pick up this. Okay, splash your face with water. It's like the opening of a video game, like learning the controls. Like, once he says, like, oh, pick up this, right bumper to pick up this, or, you know, or you know, splash water, like, press left bumper to splash water on your face. So I was really into it because of that. I was just like, okay, because I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. Yeah, it was just a very interesting movie. The one thing that I was like, I almost like threw my hands up in the air for was what, because essentially does like a loop, you could say, back to his death, essentially. And then it for a second looked like it was going to loop again and essentially start from back the start of the story and then
like
come
right
back around.
He dies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again. Go back in time completely and then like go linear again. So when it, cause it shows that white green that also flashes again. Again. And I was like, are we going back to the beginning again? Are we looping three times and stuff like that? But no, we ended up not. We ended up continuing on linearly. So I was like, okay.
Right. We ended up getting nutted on our face.
Right.
Inside of one.
Just like, I was like, how did I stumble on this tab in Pornhub? Like the fucking sister fucking, like, out of butt. I was like, this is a very specific weird kink that Gaspar Noé has, I guess. Like, what the fuck is going
on? Yeah, no, it was, like, when I first heard about it, I like to challenge myself with, like, experimental films. Just because I want to see how far my limit goes. As somebody who grew up with the internet being unmonitored, I at 12 years old, I saw things I should not have seen at all. So I was like,
"That's why you're messed up."
Yeah, and to this day, I still, you know, our old co-host Fred, me and him both kind of just ran into shit we shouldn't have, and we still to this day push ourselves to be like, "This is kind of fucked up." All right, let me see it.
Yeah,
like we have to just be like, ah. And then you kind of just get out of it and you're like, why did I do that? All right, let me see it again. And that's kind of how I felt with this, where like the first time I saw it, I was like, funny enough, I saw the longer version and it took me 2 nights to finish it just because like it was fucking slow. This time around, seeing the shorter cut, it was a much better experience. And it had a better pace. I noticed that immediately where I was like, oh my God, yes. Because when before going into it, my biggest anxiety about it was I was like, it's fucking slow. I think I even texted you guys, hey, it's fucking 3 hours long. It's fucking slow. But
yeah, me too. I thought I was like kind of getting worried about that. And maybe it is. Yeah, it's just short by 20 minutes. Is that what you're saying? That it was.
Yeah.
I guess it makes a really good. Yeah. Difference then because there were moments of slowness, but not as much as like Derek, you were saying, of like just complete lulling. I think for me, most part, I like had to pause because of just kind of like I get a cringe kind of feel when it's like those kind of movies of like this person's just making so many bad mistakes. So in that kind of first roundabout where telling you his past leading up to him getting shot and him just making horrible decisions with like no remorse. That's the type of like character that gives me cringe. So I had to pause for that moment. But I think for me, like, yeah, like I said, like the visual wonkiness, I think that's what just kind of kept me in. And then that's why, like, I very much skipped over the whole like, love hotel part, because I'm like, there's nothing like psychedelic in this part that could like kind of.
That was the most psychedelic part about the whole
shooting
film.
Laser beams like, out of their dicks in that part.
But you see one space beam out of a dick It's more so. I think the space beams are in the womb. But anyway,
no, there was the whole scene. It was like, I don't know. Maybe that was the scene that was cut because it kept going on and on. You're like, here's another couple.
It did. No, it kept going. But anything, the conjunction is lit up. But then it's like, okay, I've seen two conjunctions essentially, and of like whispering willows of light. You know, let me just, I we're getting, you know, getting closer to recording. So I'm like, let me just get through this. Let me just skip through this.
Yeah. I'll be honest. The first half hour, the opening credits, and the last 15 minutes are probably my favorite parts of the whole film. Just because, I mean, the whole film is, I grew more appreciation now seeing it a second time because I knew what to expect. And I was able to take in all the psychedelicness of it, because I love like psychedelic stuff. I love psychedelic music. That's one of my favorite genres, especially with like EDM or, you know, I'm a big Queens of the Stone Age fan. So I need it to be just so overstimulating. It's one of my big things. So this time around, kind of knowing that it's a heavy film, and being able to just take it in, I was like, okay, I actually liked it better this time around. The first time it was like just horribly slow. Like I said, it took me 2 nights to finish it, and it wasn't because it was heavy. I just was falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, all right, I'm tired. I'm just gonna knock out, and I finished it the next night. But yeah, this is definitely a movie where I wasn't like drawn by the story.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I wanted to experience it. Exactly. Like, I was like, this is a movie you experience kind of thing. And I like how you put it earlier, Derek, that it is something I suggest to people to watch as an experience. I don't necessarily think you should watch it high as fuck, because I was thinking about doing it this time around, but I was kind of busy. Like, I was kind of doing a lot of shit while I was watching it. And I'm really glad I didn't, because I realized, holy shit, just watching this sober, I was like, damn, this is a lot. This was more than I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Like, yeah, that's the thought I had. I was like, I was like, man, it was a lot for me to watch like a simple comedy last night where people are like, you know, having trouble being high. I could not have been able to handle this in an altered state. Because,
go on, sorry.
No, what were you going to say, Ariel?
I think this, for me, the most part, because my expectation was like, I'm not going to get this movie at all. So I was like, at least happy in that point. Or I don't know, maybe I didn't get it, according to what Alan has to say about what the writer-director says. I thought I was like, oh, okay, it's about this whole idea of reincarnation. So I went in the moment thinking that, I was like appreciative, like, I'm getting it kind of thing, which is like, with these kind of movies, like, I most of the time don't get it kind of thing, so yeah.
Well,
no,
Alan,
go ahead there.
No. I was just going to throw it to you. I wanted, because we kind of talked about Noé's, like, he's the director. He's the one who has this, but it's, I don't know. I'm always interested by that quote unquote death of the author thing, where there's something that comes out and you're like, oh, cool, I can interpret it this way. I think, like, Aaron, you're like, I think this is a movie about reincarnation. And I do kind of believe that, like, your interpretation of this is just as valid as what Gaspar Noé has to say in something that is a collaborative medium like film. I don't think someone can just say, well, you know what, you watched that wrong. Your interpretation, it's not right. I made the movie, I would know. I'm like, there's nothing in the text that, like, definitively says that. This is a movie that you could watch and interpret a number of different ways, and I always appreciate that. And it always kind of, I'm always just kind of like, you know what, just because you're the director doesn't mean that you can necessarily tell me, nope, this is wrong, you're wrong for thinking that, I made it like this. But I'm like, yeah, but somebody else shot this, somebody else acted in this, somebody else did, you know, in this case it's the same writer director, but a lot of times it's a different writer. So I'm always kind of like, that death of the author thing, I'm always kind of like more on the side of like, it's open to interpretation. But Alan, why don't you talk a little bit more about the Gaspar Noé was saying about it.
No, I agree with you, Derek. I kind of sometimes like when something is just completely canonized by the writer director, but there are situations, like you said, where it's nice to be open to interpretation. Like, if it's like something very straightforward where it's like, you know, hey, that guy got shot right in the face, and he Scream, like, everyone right now in the Scream fandom for some reason really wants Stu Mocker from the first Scream to come back to life. And I was like, no, a TV fell on his face, he's fucking dead, stop. And I don't think they've ever confirmed that. I mean, you know, rest in peace, Wes Craven. You know, he can't be here to confirm it, but I'm pretty sure Kevin Williamson, the writer, will one day be like, no, he's fucking dead, dude. Because I was like, it fell on his fucking face, there's no way he's going to come back. But segueing to Gaspar Noé. Okay, yeah. I didn't want to like butcher it, but you know, but his thing is like, he was saying that he's like very, you know, he's like, I don't believe in anything, I'm not religious or anything like that. He's like, this, and I had the same interpretation as Ariel. I was like, oh, reincarnation, because that was the whole setup in the first half.
Yeah,
hour.
Like an outline, yeah. Literally like an outline, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I took away from it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you go, okay, you're setting it up, there's the literal payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in my face, you know. And he's like, no, you're wrong, it's actually a dude got way too fucking high and he was super stoned, and when he got shot he had a dream, and all of this is kind of a dream that's going on, and then he dies kind of thing. And then he even kind of says that, I'm paraphrasing a lot, but essentially he says that, like, at one point he kind of thinks that it's also a loop, where he's like, it's actually not his sister, it's his mom. like Oscar's mom?
Because that's why it kind of cuts at the end. I think it cuts. It does it cut to his mom's face and then her
yeah,
face?
But it's very his hard
mom,
to see.
His mom like giving birth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know to if him. It's his mom giving birth. It just
you
shows
do see a... her. You do see oh, her. Like,
yeah, you see yeah. her. Okay. There's parts where like when it's his dad and his mom are like fucking or whatever, and then
yeah, you see
it
that
changes
part.
To his sister and Alex, okay. and then it kind of goes, and then because like when the when the camera closes up on that nipple, it's kind of hard to see the mom's face because it's like kind of faded almost. But from what he says, it's like yeah, that's his mom, and then it's kind of like this loop where it's like oh, because this whole thing was he's saying this whole movie is his traumas, and the most traumatic event. It leads up to the most traumatic event in his life is at his own birth. And I was like, I get what you're saying because, you know, oh my God, I wasn't asked for this. And but I was still like, I mean, you set it up. You set it up for reincarnation. That's how I felt it. Even watching it, I was like, oh, it's going to set up that whole thing, whatever.
Yeah,
and then I was like doing some reading afterwards. But yeah.
Yeah, it's that notion, which, yes, I know, like, but that notion has just been around for so long, too. It's just like you said, like, oh, he grabbed this from this and this. It's like just adding more, like, less originality than I had thought that this was, kind of, if he is interpreting it like that. Because that whole notion of, like, yeah, the most traumatic thing that ever happened to you is that you get, you're born. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, so yeah, that was kind of interesting, but I was kind of like a bit of a letdown.
It could still be like a rebirth, renewal, mm-hmm. because you have like that fading out. That's another way you could interpret it our way of thinking. It was like the fading out of the old life into the new life kind of thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this movie, like we touched on, is definitely one of those vibes movies where you're not watching it for the plot. You're definitely not really watching it for the characters. You're watching it to just kind of be in this world and to feel things. Like, you're not watching this character have an arc and learn a lesson and be like, all right, well, that was the ultimate moral of this story. It's more like just living with the vibes of it and just being like, I don't know if you guys have the same feeling, but like when I was watching this, it just made me feel so existential and just like empty and like a... Like, you know, I just kept thinking of fucking Scott Pilgrim, where it's just like, we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff. I was like, that's this fucking entire movie. Mm-hmm. Just
it's not a race, guys.
Am I the only one that thinks that the narc friend essentially did it because he got jealous, right? He got jealous of his mom, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, like, okay. Because he wanted Oscar... right?
Yeah, because Oscar, like, very in the beginning, that I caught it this time. I remember last time I watched it, he said something about a blowjob, and then in the psychedelic orgy love hotel scene, mm-hmm. he's sucking some dude, a couple guys' dick in the elevator. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, I thought that was more of like a dig, but then hearing it this time around, he's like, yeah, he just wants to suck my dick or something like that. That's disgusting. And then I was like, and then watching the...
Oh,
you know,
was he saying that about the narc guy? Or was he saying it about Victor. the... Oh, I thought he was saying it about the drug dealer.
Oh, no, he was saying about... I think he was saying about Victor because I thought that was the payoff. Okay. That, in the dream psychedelic love hotel sequence, that's why he's blowing those guys in the elevator. Because the first time, that's what I thought. And then this time, it kind of confirmed it. Again, though, you're kind of more... I don't know, sometimes the blinking in that opening scene, kind of like, you kind of have to get used to the blinking because you're seeing somebody else blink. So I remember both times I was like, you know, listeners, you can't see it, but I'm like blinking, like I'm forced to blink. It's kind of one of those things where it's like...
It just made me think about my own blinking
like
so much.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when you see somebody yawn and you yawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it, yeah. And just like you were saying, Ariel, with first person game thing, because, you know, it reminded me of a Resident Evil 7, you know, Biohazard, because that one is first person. It's not, you know, third person or tank controls. So, yeah, even in that game, I think there's instances where you start real, like, you know, you see his hands and he's putting, like, ointment on it, you know, he's spoilers, you know, he gets his hand cut off and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And it's, like, right in your face. But, yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely, you know, the whole time I was watching, I was like, this is, like, definitely a midnight movie. Like, I would, I definitely would like to watch it in theaters. Like, not immediately, because I
but not, don't go in tired, like, because you do kind of want alertness, you know, that's what, but you don't want, that's the thing, like, going back to you guys saying, like, you didn't want to watch this, like, you know, under the influence and stuff like that, like, you want alertness while watching this movie, but you don't want to be over alert.
Because it's a lot. Like, I think, I'm trying to think of a movie I saw, like, faded as fuck, that was, like, stimulating, and it was nowhere near as, like this. I think it was, it might just be an anime intro that's, like, flashy and like Demon Slayer or some shit. They were really cool, and, like, watching that high, I'm like, whoa, okay, that's a lot. I'm glad it's just, you know, a minute 30 seconds. Almost 3 fucking hours of this is like, oh my god, it's too much. Like, especially high.
Yeah, and but it does keep your attention. It's not something like, you know, Skinamarink or something where you're just kind of like, you are just kind of watching things, but at least things are like happening in this movie, you know?
Yeah. My brother kind of started to fall asleep during that one, he said, until like it's his story to tell, but he kind of like had like a kind of heightened watching of that one, because while he was kind of like falling asleep, the movie kind of melded into his like subconscious itself. And
yeah, that's what I hear. Like, I still haven't seen it, which I'm kicking myself in the ass about.
Yeah,
I've been wanting to watch it, but
they showed those at like 10 o'clock showings and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Just look at a wall for an hour and a half, Alan. You'll get the experience.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It's kind of it sounds creepy. Like, the trailers are great, and that's the one thing is like, because I go on Letterboxd and then I hear two things. It's always two things. Like Derek said, just turn off the lights and hang out there for an hour and a half, or stare at a wall, or oh my god, this is one of the scariest fucking things. I feel like I'm seeing things in real life. Like, it's very immersive.
You have to be like semi sleepy for that one. So
yeah, I fell asleep the first time I saw.
Yeah, but you kind of like. Yeah, you have to be like trying to pay attention, but you're very tired apparently, according to my brother, because then you'll like the movie and your subconscious half sleep state will meld together. So yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm glad to hear what you guys had to say about it. It's been one of those movies that's been on my mind since we started this podcast. And again, like I said, I was like, do I want to challenge myself to watch that again? Because it's a lot, can be slow, but you know what? This time around, it was a lot easier to watch and it was a lot easier to take in. So I'm happy to hear that you guys kind of enjoyed it, at least the vibes of it all, the experience. Because like I said, it's not a movie you sit down for the story or for the character arcs, like Derek was saying. It's an experience. Just like, you know, I think on one of our older podcasts, we had a guest and we brought up Antichrist. That movie is not about the story. That movie is just fucking visceral and dark and heavy, and it's just no fun. But you watch it because it's an experience, and it's not even like I don't even know if I would consider it a horror movie. It's just a heavy experimental film. But yeah, pretty much yeah. Well, I wanted to ask, since we always kind of do these now, what is the type of experimental film that you guys have seen that you would recommend to everybody, or you feel like you're like, you saw it and you're like, oh shit, you know what, I would recommend this one, or I would never watch this shit again, like that one time was good enough.
Well, the one like one that popped in my head that I like don't really want to watch, I was just kind of thinking while you were like explaining the concept, Ichi the Killer. I like.
Was, oh my like, god! Ichi the like, Killer is a fucking shit, dude. I'll watch that shit again and again. No, that movie's fucking wild.
No, that vibe is like not my vibe. Like, again, the whole body horror and all
that's
that.
That's fucking Fred and I. Fred and I were holy shit! It's one of the goriest films of all time. Let's watch it. And we sat and watched it. And we're like, damn, hey, that shit was fucked up. Okay, you thought the opening credits of this film was fucking awesome. Ichi the Killer. Oh, coincidentally, both have nut. Itch of the Killer's opening title, like it shows, Itch of the Killer is him nutting, and his cum falls on on a on like a leaf, and it spells the title of the film.
Oh my god,
Ariel! I'm fucking shocked you saw that. I thought you were the last person. I didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it. That's what I'm saying. I'll never watch it. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it.
Oh
no,
my
no,
god!
No! Holy I didn't watch shit. It. I was saying that's a movie that I see it. I know it's not the vibe for me. I'm not gonna watch it. I didn't watch it. No.
Okay. I thought you watched. Yeah. No. Aerial side to the camera.
No. I was like thinking of like maybe I should, because I know it's like a classic and all that. I'm like, but then like
it's a classic I like to see fucked up shit.
Yeah,
like that's like me and Fred's classics where we're like, yeah, let's see like fucking intense shit.
Well, I thought at least it like it's so because it's a cult. Like one of the cult classics that they have a series at the Frida. And it had come up.
Yeah, I wanted to see.
Well, if there's an actual like story, maybe. But then I saw like they show like a trailer and stuff. I was like, no, there's no story here. Okay, it's just body horror. There's a story, but it's not like kind of thing.
It's an experience. That's actually a really good one. Yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah,
midnight movie for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Derek. Yeah. Derek, yours.
So I mean, I tend to like films that are inspired by experimental, but like have experimental elements but aren't fully experimental. I tend not to like stuff that just like goes too overboard where you're like, what is even this about? So like I've mentioned, you know, before, a lot of times like I like The Green Knight. I feel like that one gets it just enough weirdness, but it's still a coherent story, but it has those non-formalistic elements in it. I really like I'm Thinking of Anything. So that's probably one of my favorite experimental films. I like a lot of the experimental stuff that Michel Gondry does. And, you know, like just and like especially when they mix it, like I said, with the more traditional filmmaking. And then you have those experimental weird shit creep in. Like Eternal Sunshine is one of my all time favorite movies. And as Gondry has gone on to direct more of his films rather than just being a writer, his stuff has gotten weirder and weirder and more interesting. So yeah, I mean, definitely. And there's some animated stuff that I think does some really experimental stuff, interesting, you know, a lot of like anime that's just kind of bizarre and off the wall, you know, stuff like we've covered, like I think even Thief and the Cobbler. It's not animated, but Sunshine was another one that got experimental towards the end. Interstellar, these were all obviously inspired by 2001, so they do have those kind of trippy elements that are kind of grandfathered in through that. So I think, yeah, those are a lot of my favorites for sure. But definitely go watch I'm Thinking of Anything, so that's top of the list.
Okay, real fast. Is that movie about suicide?
No, but maybe. It's one of those, like, I don't think so, but you could definitely read it that way.
Okay, because I don't know anything about it. I just heard the title, and I immediately was like, is someone going to kill themselves? Because that sounds very...
It's about very... the title's in reference to a breakup.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, I keep hearing how good it is, but no one says what it's about. They're just like, bro, you got to watch it, go in, not knowing anything about it. But I'm like, is it going to be like a weird, heavy drama about suicide? Because it's kind of weird.
Weird as shit. Like,
okay, cool.
But like Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley, double Jessies, they're both so good in it.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about ending that one. Yeah.
It's one of those movies I made my mom watch and she's like, so what was happening?
So I think movie-wise, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. One that we discussed on here, I guess. You could say it's a vibe, like, Monkey Bone and stuff like that. But that's, like, going off Alan. That's a childhood one. One that, like, I just want to, like, throw out a show that, like, is interesting concept of a show. And I really freaking loved the show itself. I think it might go down as, like, one of my favorite shows of all times. Of that I just recently saw on Netflix was the Japanese show Alice in Borderlands.
Oh, I wanted to watch that.
It's like it's just this concept, and I don't want to give the ending away.
No, don't please. Yeah,
but you know, no, I'm not going to. But the how it ends, I was just like, this show is it that is brilliance. It is brilliant. Yeah, I ended up loving that show so much. It ended so incredible. Like, it's based on a manga. I guess they followed the manga pretty closely, except for one aspect at the end. But yeah, it is such an incredible, like, it's such an incredible payoff of a show at the end. And definitely a kind of high cons. It starts off kind of... the first season, it's two seasons. The first season has a weirdness to it, but then the second season just builds on that situation, and the ending just kind of makes it, oh, this is like a whole concept kind of show. So it's really good.
Yeah. But before we get to you, Alan, I just wanted to, you mm-hmm. reminded me real fast, Ariel, with Monkey Bone. I just want to shout out just like Henry Selick in general.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorite filmmakers of like at making weird, existential, experimental, almost animated stuff. And I also just want to throw out Wendell and Wilde, James and the Giant Peach, and especially Coraline is some really great ones.
I remember James and the Giant
Peach.
Did he do
Coraline?
Yes, he did. Everyone thinks it's Tim Burton because they were like, from the director.
No,
just that it's Laika.
It was their first film. And yeah.
Okay, he like directed, yeah.
Yeah.
Same with the Nightmare Before Christmas. Everyone's like, oh, it's a Tim Burton movie. I mean, he produced it, but it was...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Henry Selick, yeah.
It always bugs the fuck out of me. I really don't like that. It really kind of grinds my...
Me too.
But, oh, man, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Because Enter the Void was one, and then a big shocker that, you know, Ariel brought up with Itchy the Killer. I guess of Extreme, I saw it when I was 12, and I brought it up multiple times. It is kind of weird, and it's intense and graphic, and sometimes at the end of the movie, you go, I don't know what the fuck is happening, is, again, one I bring up, like I said all the time, is End of Evangelion.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking trailer, the teaser for that film is just screaming for 30 seconds, and it's just horrifying, and... Again, it was another one that me and Fred saw where we're like, oh, I should not have seen it when I was like 11, 12 years old because it fucked me up. But now I'm like, okay, I kind of want to watch it again, even though it's still a movie that I'm afraid to watch again because it was just a lot. But yeah, I guess like, animated wise, I would say that one. Maybe some people might not think it's experimental, but it's, I wouldn't even call it a vibe. It's shit just happening, and it's just nothing happy is happening at all.
Mm-hmm. In that vein, because you mentioned Henry Selick and all those types of movies and like Laika and all that, kind of spurred me on to one movie that I think would fall into it. And I do kind of think we should cover it eventually. Is Nine? Nine is a really good like
the one with like the sock puppet kind of like
yeah.
Okay.
Very high concept of like kind of like life and stuff like that, even too.
I would be interested to revisit that one.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I did see that one on September 9th, 2009.
Okay.
I think we just got out of school and we're like, we had nothing to do. And we're like, fuck it. I don't remember much of it, but I remember I was like, yeah, it was kind of cool.
Nice. And this, I will say, like, this is kind of reminding me of, is this, all these experimental films and, you know, this one, Enter the Void in particular, talk about, they're kind of this subgenre of movie, and there's this great Letterboxd list that I love looking at called Lonely People in Neon Cities, where it's just, like, somebody wandering around this really cool, bright neon city, you know, stuff like this, or, like, Drive, or Blade Runner 2049.
Yes, Drive, dude. Yeah, hell yeah, dude.
Like, I love that.
Kavinsky.
Yes, I love, you know what I mean? I love that kind of vibe in a movie where it's somebody just wandering around, there's neon Same. Lights, and it's just like, or In the Mood for Love is another really good one for that list. So I always love that kind of aesthetic.
Yeah, same here. I'm a big fan of it. I love like Outrun and like synthwave music. Like mm-hmm. that reminds you of like neon lights,
mm-hmm.
City pop, like Japanese city pop, future funk. That music is one of my favorite genres, and I think about that shit all the time. Just driving lonely in a city, neon lights, mm-hmm. just like I. That's why I fell in love with Drive. I know people mm-hmm. are like, "He's just like me, for real, for real." But I'm like, no, I actually fell in love with it because I just love the vibe of that movie,
mm-hmm.
especially with Kavinsky's Night Call playing at the very beginning. Drew me in within seconds. I was like, oh, I already liked this movie. I already loved it. But yeah.
Absolutely.
But he is just like me, for real, for real.
You've got the Scorpion jacket.
I still want to buy that fucking jacket.
Right? One of these Halloweens. I'm going to have to do it.
I did see one Halloween. This one guy, it was over in Old Town Orange. Nobody knew who he was. He like splattered blood on his face. He had a hammer, but he had like a jean jacket on.
Mm-hmm.
And he did his hair like him. And it's one of the few scenes where he's not wearing the Scorpion jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the bar and I was waiting for my drink and he ordered a drink. And I looked at him and I was like, are you Driver from Drive? And he's like, dude, you're the only fucking person all night that knew who the fuck I was. Everybody thought I was just some fucking serial killer. And I was like, I'm gonna be real. It's because you need the Scorpion jacket. He's like, I know, but it's fucking $500. And I was just like, I get you, though. But I was like, I hope that made your night. He's like, it did. I appreciate it. No one knows who the fuck I am. But yeah.
Nice.
But yeah.
Very nice.
But anyways, yeah. Any announcements you guys want to make or anything? Shameless plugs?
I don't think I have anything coming up. I have been taking it a little bit easier with all the guest spots. But, you know, definitely check out some of the past ones I did with Real Chums. I'm always on Can I Say Something with my buddy Damien, so check out that show. And then obviously check out our Patreon under Cast Company and we're gonna have always some exclusive stuff for the patrons over there for as little as a dollar.
As always, I host a podcast called You've Never Seen. Comes out at the beginning of each month. This past month one, which will newer one will also be coming out too, but at least in present times recently I started up a new series with my brother where I introduce him to movies of my childhood that have stuck around with me and are some of my favorites. So we discussed another kind of high concept a bit at the time, I would say, of Pagemaster with Macaulay Culkin in the 1990s movie.
That movie scared the shit out of me. As a kid, one of my cousins would religiously watch that movie, and I'm pretty sure it was the horror section.
The Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah,
you should have. I've never seen it either, Ariel. So
really, I'm
kind of doing its special series with my brother.
I don't.
Yeah.
I just said.
Yeah. But yeah. So that's the newest one, at least currently. Then we're gonna be following up with other ones. So check out at the first of each month for that.
Yes. And definitely check us out on all the socials under Cast Company everywhere. Give us 5 stars if you're listening on Spotify or iTunes. Give us a like if you're watching on YouTube. And give us a follow on Instagram, under Cast Company, under Cast Co on Twitter. All the places, we really appreciate it.
Thanks for being amazing, everybody.
Now take it easy.
Thank you so much, everyone. And take it easy. Have a good one.